Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man. And for the next hour, you're in Finland. And today is May 5th, 2008. A lot has happened in the last week or so. But on this day in history, a couple of really interesting historical events, one of which was Music Hall was dedicated to New York City. It was later renamed Carnegie Hall. I suppose Andrew Carnegie paid to have it refurbished. Guess what year they opened Carnegie Hall in New York? Think about this, folks. Yes, that's right. 1891. And it was the day that John Scopes was arrested. He's a biology teacher in Tennessee. He was arrested for teaching evolution. And if you pay attention to these kinds of things in history, you already know that was 1925. The Scopes trial came from there, as well as the movie Inherit the Wind. In any case, let's move on to real life events, what's happening on this date. We've got a couple of main issues to cover, but as always, we're going to cover a little bit of news first. And the most bizarre story of last week, and it's almost a week old now, is this Australian guy who got caught having imprisoned his daughter for 24 years in a windowless basement cell and fathering 7 children with her, including 3 who spent their entire lives in this cell. So we're talking kids that get to be pretty old, and it's just the most bizarre thing. I don't need to spend a lot of time on it, except to say that it's now come out that his wife didn't know anything about it. They thought she might have been complicit. No. He told her that the daughter had run away and joined a cult when she was 17, and the daughter's now 42. She's been missing since 1984. It's just the most bizarre thing. I just can't quite imagine it. Also, almost a week ago, the Supreme Court upheld the Indiana law on voter ID. Basically, it requires a picture ID, a specific government-issued identification, a driver's license or passport with a picture, to vote. And so if you're unfamiliar with the context of this, these laws are being passed by Republican legislatures in certain states. And so you need to understand something about the way politics works in America. If you're not already aware of it, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, this is the way it works. Republicans are interested in suppressing the vote. When there is large turnouts, Republicans do poorly. It looks like there's going to be a large turnout for Democrats in particular this time, but for decades, and this is really one of the linchpins of Karl Rove's strategy, is you need to win, you need to have more votes than the other side. One way to do that is get out more of your people. The other way to do it is to make sure that some of their people stay home or they don't get to vote or their votes don't count. And so that's why there's been this whole big flap from Florida in 2000 through the suspicions in the 2004 election in Ohio and elsewhere. And while I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm not enough of a 20%er to be a conspiracy theorist, it's pretty well documented that Republicans would rather depress the turnout. Now, that's an awful thing that they have to admit in a democracy. They don't want to maximize turnout in general. But here's where the voter ID laws come in. If people have to have a picture ID to vote in this November's election, many people are going to be turned away from the polls. Now, I think they're allowed to cast a provisional ballot and come back with your ID in most states. But A, what percentage of people are going to do that? And B, they almost never count provisional ballots. That is, you don't get that far. In any case, the way this works is that if you think about the people who are disenfranchised by this, the people who don't carry around a picture ID with them automatically, it's people without a license, for one thing. Right? Most Americans don't have a passport, but most of them have a license, and most of them are picture ID licenses. But there's a percentage of Americans that don't have licenses. Who don't have licenses? Very poor people don't have licenses. Urban people don't have licenses. For example, in Manhattan, most people in Manhattan don't own a car. It doesn't pay to try and keep a car in Manhattan, so a huge percentage of them don't own a car. So you might let your license expire. You might not keep a license if you live in a city. You don't bother keeping up a license if you're poor and don't have a car. And retirees tend to give up their license, and as you get older, if you give up your license, you probably don't have a picture ID of yourself anymore. So basically, people who are more likely to vote Democratic are the people who are disenfranchised by this law. And the Supreme Court, to no one's surprise, because it's a Republican-leaning Supreme Court these days, upheld it and said it's not too big a burden to require people to bring picture ID. So this will go on in other states. You know, this, it's worth saying a few things about the Republican approach to elections. If you recall in 2000, I think it was 2002, 2004, more than 2006, but I get my years confused. One of the ways you can bring your troops out is to put certain ballot initiatives on the ballot. And so they made this big deal about gay marriage and having laws, specific state laws forbidding gay marriage as a device to bring voters out. So it was on the Ohio ballot, I believe, in 2006. Maybe it was 2004. And it was on other ballots, like 17 ballots over the last 4 or 6 years. And the primary purpose there is to get the base excited and get them to come out and vote. And while they're coming out to vote for this referendum, they'll vote for the candidates of your party. Now, the Democrats could use that technique as well. I'm trying to think of an instance where they have. I'm sure there have been some. But what I expect this time around is not the gay marriage thing. I've been expecting immigration reform initiatives, referenda on the ballot in various states to try and bring out the Republican base. Because that's a Rovian technique. Increase your turnout, decrease the other guys by whatever means is necessary. And so that's what we expect to see from them. Hillary Clinton has proposed, as John McCain, a suspension of the gas tax over the summer. We're going to let that issue go till we get to politics, but that's been big in the news. Also, there's a woman who got a Silver Star. Monica Brown was an Army medic, and in Afghanistan in 2007, she risked her life as a medic to save her troops, including, I think, she had to open fire on somebody, or maybe that was someone else that actually defended herself, defended her troops. She risked her life to shield and treat her comrades. And so she got a Silver Star, only the second woman to get a Silver Star since World War II. And within a few days of this coming to light, the Army pulled her out of the camp she was in and the unit she was serving, in part because it highlights the fact that women are in dangerous positions here in this war. And technically, we say we're not going to put them in combat positions. Although she was a medic, she's going to be exposed to fire at some point, is the way it works. Anyway, that's something we'll continue to come to grips with, because we're not quite ready to think about sending women to war, as it were. Although 10% of the troops serving in Iraq are women. Oh, another story, a sad story, I guess I have to say, is the suicide of the D.C. madam, Deborah Jean Pelfrey. Is that her middle name? I lose track. Committed suicide last week in Florida, actually not far from where my ex-sister-in-law and my ex-wife live, in Tarpon Springs, Florida. She committed suicide at her mother's place. You know, I'm just going to say a couple words about her and be done with her. This has received way too much coverage in the Washington press, and a lot of that's in the local paper, but maybe it's received it in the national press as well. But this woman is a coward. I mean, how she dealt with her whole trial. She pretended she wasn't guilty instead of, you know, paying the piper when she got caught. And then she threatened to release, in fact, she did release the telephone numbers, the telephone records, thousands of telephone calls. You know, one of the things you're supposed to do if you're going to go into this kind of a business where you help other people break the law is that you keep it quiet when you get caught. You don't publish the names of the Johns. Part of what they're paying for is your discretion. At least that's what I understand. So I knew she had no integrity, but the idea that her attitude is just, I can't stand going to prison again, because she's been in prison for prostitution before. I can't stand going to prison, so I'm going to kill myself. Suck it up and deal with life, sweetheart. I'm sorry, I have trouble finding sympathy for her because she took the chickens way out. I mean, she's not like she was tremendously depressed and people commit suicide in those situations. No, she just thought the road she had dealt herself was now too hard, and so she was going to opt out. Okay, oh, another non-issue that came up this week. There was this whole flap last week, apparently, that I didn't pay too much attention to, about McCain's birth in Panama. And the fact that he was born in Panama, even though the Constitution requires the president to be a natural-born citizen, there were people claiming that, oh, he's not eligible to be president. Well, the Senate voted last week. That's one of the reasons this made it into the news. Voted last week to declare him a natural-born citizen eligible to be president. Well, first of all, it's a non-binding resolution. It's just the sense of the Senate. I think they voted unanimously, so it was, I don't know if it was 100-1, but no one voted against it, of course. Of course John McCain's eligible to be president. You know, they pulled the same thing. People talked the same way when Barry Goldwater ran for president in 64. Of course, he had no chance. McCain, because he was a military brat, was born in the Panama Canal Zone, but Goldwater was running in 64, and he was old enough that he had been born in Arizona before Arizona was a state. I think Arizona was made a state in something like 1909, and Goldwater had been born a few years before when it was only a territory. So the problem is the Constitution says that the president must be a natural-born citizen, as opposed to Arnold Schwarzenegger's now a U.S. citizen, but he was born elsewhere and acquired citizenship here. McCain was a U.S. citizen when he was born, is the argument. Born on a military base, a U.S. military base, to American parents. So it's a silly thing, but it's worth noting that the Constitution has never actually defined this issue of natural born. So I don't think anybody's going to pay any attention to this argument about McCain, but we have never gone back, and until there's a case, a legal case, we are never going to define this. And of course, the silliest thing would be is if McCain were to get president, then they take it to court and say, okay, is he a natural born citizen? The Supreme Court's forced to rule, and they somehow were to, on a technicality, rule that no, someone born outside is not a, quote, a natural born citizen. They're a citizen, but it's not the same as a natural born citizen. So, I mean, we could argue you could change that law, too. Of course, that would be the Arlen Specter. I don't mean Arlen Specter. The Orrin Hatch proposal. He wants to change the law in what people call the Schwarzenegger exception so that any citizen of the U.S. can be elected president. Now, there's a good argument for that kind of an approach. It's this. 200 years ago, when we were just a fledgling democracy and breaking away from Great Britain and getting our feet on the ground, you wouldn't want someone to come over from England whose loyalties still lay with England to become president and then somehow harm the, you know, nascent democracy we had. Instead, they passed a law that said you must, I mean, they put in the Constitution, you must be a natural-born citizen. But today, maybe less important. I'm against the Orrin Hatch proposal because he put it in specifically for Arnold Schwarzenegger, so Arnold Schwarzenegger could become president. Orrin Hatch, senator from Utah, Republican senator from Utah, is a friend of Arnold's. Arnold's campaigned for him, given him money, and so he thinks Arnold would make a swell president. I don't see the need to have another actor in the White House anytime soon, and we'll leave it at that. So, going to national news for a minute, Zimbabwe has finally, after a month, released the results of their election, although not in any way that anybody could check, but they claim we need a runoff election, that the winning candidate, I can't even pronounce his name, Servangarani, got 48% of the vote. The opposition to Mugabe, who's been in control since 1980 or 84, the opposition believes they got 50.3% and there's no need for a runoff. They've held back on, Mugabe's government has held back, and the election commission, which is under his control, has held back with the results for a month. They could have announced them after 3 days. Very suspicious. It'll be interesting to see if the opposition agrees to a runoff. They might kick butt. On the other hand, Mugabe may get his thugs out in greater force than they are already and intimidate the voters and actually be able to stay in office by manipulating the next election. So I don't know how that'll go. And let's see. Oh, there's experts questioning whether the reading program set up the primary, one of the linchpins of No Child Left Behind is actually working. There are, there's been a great deal of praise from people near the Bush administration for the success of this program. And we'll go into it another night, but it's the phonics approach to readings, and conservatives, for some reason, tout that as far superior to learning more in-depth versions of reading, which focus on comprehension and understanding and things like that. So it's a still an open question, and we need scientific research for it. We're going to get to another issue tonight for which science will have something to say, but at this point, we are thinking in terms of getting as much, how do I want to put this? So science has taken a beating the last 8 years, and I can't wait for the next president. Whoever it is not going to be an agnostic about science. John McCain is an adult. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are adults. They will not give us this childish approach to science that we've seen from the Bush administration. And we'll detail a specific example of that later in the show. The other thing that last week was the anniversary of Mission Accomplished. I believe it was May 1st, is that right? That 5 years ago, May 1st, that the president flew into the Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier in a jet, in a flight suit with a codpiece, looking manly as can be, and declared mission accomplished. So let's just recap a little bit, because this is as good a way to highlight the foolishness that is George Bush as anything. If you remember when this happened, the Democrats didn't like it, but they had trouble. They were considered spoil sports for trying to rain on Bush's parade, but it was the ultimate grandstanding. So, leaving aside the mission accomplished banner for the moment, let's remember how this transpired. The Abraham Lincoln was sailing back into California. I believe it was sailing into California. And Bush went out to the West Coast. And the plan was to have him fly out. I think Karl Rove cooked this up. He was going to fly out to the Abraham Lincoln on a jet because it was too far away to take a helicopter. It was more than 80 miles out to shore, and it didn't make sense to take a helicopter. So they had this idea, put him in a jet. He used to fly jets for the Texas Air National Guard and keep the coast of Texas free and uncommunist during the Vietnam era, and so technically he's a pilot. So they put him in the second seat, and when there wasn't any harm that could be done, he took the controls for a little while up there. But a experienced young pilot landed them on the aircraft carrier. Bush gets out in the flight suit, looking like $1 million, and then he changes into his suit and gives his speech behind the Mission Accomplished banner and declares that major combat operations in Iraq are over. So it was a stunt. It turns out the Abraham Lincoln was getting so close to shore that the Pentagon or the Bush administration, whoever did it, the Navy, turned it around and sent it back out to sea, or had it circle for a while, so that they had the excuse of sending Bush out on the plane, because otherwise it was close enough for a helicopter. And when the Mission Impossible, a little Freudian slip there, when the Mission Accomplished banner came out, and it turned out the mission wasn't accomplished, the White House claimed they didn't produce it, that it was produced on the ship. It turns out that was wrong. It was done at the White House behest, and while we've never gotten to the bottom of who ordered it, the sailors on the ship say that ain't our banner. So anyway, that's just a little bit more of what's happening. The Andy Finn Show is going to take a break here on WEBR, and we will be back in just a minute.